Chapter 20. The Dome. Months of dust had clogged the releases on the hatch. Callie and Jake threw their weight against the lever and felt it grind through centimeters of grit. It jammed once, twice, and finally hit the release point.
"Figures," said Gordon, his voice echoing in his helmet. His suit was a slimmer, newer model with bright white panels against red Nomex. "Goddamn dust gets into everything out here."
The odd-shaped airlock with the sloped ceiling barely held the four of them. Gordon and Izmi stayed pressed against the interior hatch while Callie and Jake wrestled with the controls. The short step ladder leading up to the high-mounted exterior hatch made it tough to get decent leverage. Callie turned to glance at the sheriff, then back to Jake. They threw their shoulders against the hatch. The hinges were just as clogged with dust, and the hatch resisted as they heaved. Jake shifted and bumped his helmet against hers. Particles cascaded down through the gap, sparkling in the interior lights. The hatch grudgingly moved another 20 centimeters, 20 more, and finally locked open when they'd pushed it perpendicular to the dome. She leaned out the open hatch. Swirls and slides of dust decorated the smooth surface of the dome. To either side, a scattering of external lights let her glimpse the shapes of Khonsu and Chandra, two of the city's broad arms, reaching out like massive fallen trees. Almost 30 meters below, she could just pick out the dark gray line of Aldrin Avenue in the blackness. Near the end of Aldrin, maybe a quarter kilometer away, she could just barely see the white and glass capsule of Anubis, marked out by its running lights. Down below, thousands of undead clients drifted in and out of the shafts of light. Maybe tens of thousands. They hadn't done an actual count yet.
"How's it look?" asked Izmi.
"Far away,"
Callie answered.
"Dark."
"It'll be fine," said Jake. "You want to head out first, or you want me to?"
Callie turned her head to look at the frame of the hatch around her helmet.
"I'm here. I'll go."
"Last chance for anyone to back out," he said.
"I'm good."
"So am I," said Izmi. "Let's go."
Callie set one boot on the bottom rung of the stepladder, lifted her other one from the floor, and her next step carried her out onto the dome. Dust slid away from her feet. It cascaded down the side of the dome and vanished into darkness just a meter away. She turned, found the handhold line right where it was supposed to be, just a wire cord stretching around the dome so anyone working outside could clip on and not worry about falling. Her fingers closed over it, and she took another step away from the hatch. This high up the dome, she barely noticed the slope, in part because she could barely see anything 2 meters from the hatch. She reached up with her free hand and switched on her suit's floodlights. Brilliant circles of light appeared on the lunacrete and spilled out around her. Jake came out next. He switched on his own lights, grabbed the line, and gestured for her to move along. A minute later, Izmi joined them out on the surface of the dome. Gordon stepped up, but not out of the hatch.
"You got everything?"
Jake turned to look at Callie, then to Izmi, and passed her to the sheriff.
"Guess so."
"Tessa,"
asked Callie,
"how's that hardlock coming?"
Her voice echoed in their helmets.
"Almost there. I'm leaving one seal in place just in case something on the other side's trying to get in. Should be able to open it in about 20 minutes.
"Excellent," said Jake. "We'll say when."
"Happy landing,"
Tessa said.
"Don't break a leg."
"I thought breaking a leg was good luck," said Jake.
"Only in a theater," Callie said. "Out here it just means breaking your leg." "Are we going to do this?"
asked Izmi.
"Yeah,"
said Jake. He turned so she could see his face through his helmet's visor.
"Gonna do it, and it's gonna work fine."
Izmi managed a weak smile.
"That sounded much more convincing inside."
They shuffled along the dome for a few meters until Aldrin Avenue stretched straight out below them.
"It looks very narrow from up here,"
said Izmi.
"It's not,"
said Callie.
"You know it isn't. We just walked through it yesterday. Just making the observation."
"Okay," Jake said. "My dumb idea, so I'll go first."
You sure this is going to work?
Asked Izmi.
Well, Tessa didn't say anything, and she seems to take a lot of pleasure in pointing out when one of us is wrong about something.
You know your comm channel's still open, right?
Echoed Tessa's voice.
That's mean, if you're saying things like that when you know I'll hear them.
Callie bit back a laugh. Jake let go of the handhold line and crouched down on the dome. He waddled down the slope, dropped onto his butt, and inched himself forward. He started to slide. In seconds, his speed increased. He sank below the dome's horizon, and a loud bang and clatter echoed over all their speakers. Down below, his floodlights shook and bounced away from the dome before coming to rest. Callie stretched up and aimed her own lights below.
Jake? Jake, please answer,
said Izmi.
Give me a chance to answer, he called out. Callie relaxed.
You okay?
Yeah, he said. His floodlights shifted, swung, and pointed up at them. Yeah, mostly. Hit a little faster than I planned, and it sent me rolling.
Why, mostly?
Asked Izmi.
He said. I cracked my visor.
Callie caught her breath. Izmi's eyes went wide in her helmet.
What? How bad?
It's fine. Maybe a 5-centimeter crack. We've all had worse, nothing to worry about.
Are you sure?
Yeah, he said. Come on, who's next?
Callie and Izmi looked at each other.
I guess me,
said Callie.
Okay, said Jake. Line up on my lights. I'm right in the middle of the Aldrin roof. Slide down, use your hands to guide you if you start to drift a bit.
Anything else?
Nope. It's going to take you all of 5 seconds.
Callie looked down at the twin floodlights of Jake's suit, shuffled a bit to her right, and let go of the line. She lowered herself into a squat, inched forward, and dropped onto her ass. The suit's pack shifted and tugged at her shoulders. She pushed herself forward with her hands, pushed again, and the lunacrete began to slip out from under her. The dome dropped away fast, and she sailed into the shadows, outracing Jake's attempt to keep his lights on her. Her hands pressed down, trying to slow her slide, and the surface smacked the palms of her gloves away. For a second, she fell, aware she was practically upright again, and then the hallway roof rushed up at her out of the dark and slammed into her boots. She bounced, went a few feet into the air with a yelp, and Jake grabbed her knee and tugged her back down.
Fuck me,
she barked out as her feet settled onto the lunacrete.
You okay?
Just caught me off guard.
She took a few steps, bouncing lightly on her toes and stretching her feet. Callie turned to look at Jake. A short white line floated above his left cheek, the crack in his visor.
It's nothing, he said, seeing her gaze. Seriously, you know the specs. These things are tough as hell.
She turned away, ready to aim her own floodlights back up at Izmi, and the twin beams panned out across the moon. The surface moved like an ocean, complete with currents and eddies. Hundreds of zombies filled the space around Aldrin Avenue. Men, women, children, all ages, all colors, bald and braided and buzz-cut, all dressed in the finest suits and dresses and robes. Their frozen eyes gazed back at her.
Jesus.
They can't get up here, he said. Don't worry.
Callie panned the light across them again. On a handful of them, the burial clothes had crumpled at the shoulders and elbows, revealing pallid, frozen flesh. As they reached up, countless cufflinks and rings and bracelets and watches gleamed in the harsh glare of the floodlights. She shuddered and turned away.
It's easy, Izmi, she said. Just be ready for the jolt at the end. I'm ready.
Up above, the small figure crouched down, vanishing behind the curve of the dome.
Here I come.
This time Callie caught the faint rasping noise she'd overlooked when Jake slid. The sliding sounds inside Izmi's suit played over her comm. Off to her right, Izmi rose up along the edge of the dome. The other woman had aimed wrong, or maybe veered while she slid. Her hands pushed down, almost lifting her up off the surface.
Turn!
Yelled Callie.
Turn now!
Push!
Shouted Jake. A dozen meters above them, Izmi slammed her hands down and kicked at the dome. It flipped her up, head over heels, and she tumbled down. She howled. Callie and Jake ran to the edge of the hallway, reaching for her. Ismi's suit rolled again, bounced, and soared away from the dome. Callie twisted and leaped back to keep her in her sights. She looked up, reached out, tried to spot the other suit through her visor. Ismi was too far over. Between the momentum of her descent and the tumble, she crashed to the lunar surface, almost 20 meters away from the avenue. Her pack took the brunt of the landing. Callie heard her grunt on impact. The zombies closed in on her.
"Get up!" yelled Jake. "No time! Get up and run, now!"
The wave of clients closed in around Ismi, blocking her from view.
"Come on!"
Callie shouted. She turned her floodlights at the dome.
"There's a surface ladder maybe 10 meters from you. You can jump to it."
"Get up!"
Ismi lurched up to her feet, surrounded by the undead. She swung her heavy, space-suited arms, batted their grasping hands away, and broke through the circle, heading away from the dome.
"No!" yelled Callie. "Wrong way!"
"Circle back," Jake called out. "Ismi, turn left. You've got to come back around."
She vanished into the darkness. Just a flicker of floodlights glimpsed through the hordes or against a structure. Her breathing echoed over their speakers.
"I'm okay," she said. Just give me a minute." "There's too many to outrun on foot," said Callie. "You have to get up on a tower or a shed or something."
Ismi gasped, and a nearby scaffolding tower lit up as her floodlights hit it. Callie's lights flitted over something sailing through space, and she heard the clang as the spacesuit collided with the tower. Ismi gasped again, and Callie's floodlights found her clinging to one of the aluminum crossbeams above the crowd of zombies.
"Fucking hell," sighed Jake. "Everyone okay out there?" asked Gordon's voice.
"Just wonderful," said Ismi.
The distant figure lurched upward, then up again.
"I thought the day couldn't get any worse," her voice cracked.
"Get up high," said Callie. "Once we have Anubis, we'll circle around and get you."
"I don't know if I can get any higher. The next crossbar is almost 2 meters up."
"Stay right where you are," said Jake. "Get comfy. Rest. Don't look down."
Ismi barked out a grim laugh. Callie and Jake exchanged a look and then fell in next to each other, lumbering down along the hallway roof. The top of the structure had been built flat, probably to make it easier on maintenance people. It could have been a wide sidewalk. "A top walk," Callie mused. Their two spacesuits easily fit side by side. Callie could feel her legs ache at the steady pace, wanting to bound and leap ahead, but there were only a handful of work lights, and the top walk stretched off into the dark. It was probably smooth and flat up ahead, but she didn't like the idea of stumbling over some cache of tools or a junction box, maybe even tumbling like Ismi had, and sliding down the sloped sides of Aldrin to the ground. She twisted her body, turned her shoulders, and aimed her floodlights down along the side of the avenue. The undead stumbled along, staying as close as they could. The tallest still stood a good 3 meters too short to reach the top walk, their hands stretched out anyway, fingers grasping in the vacuum of space. The speakers in her helmet let out a soft pop, the sound of a private channel opening.
"You okay?"
She looked over at Jake.
"I guess."
"Just stay focused. We're doing fine."
"Ismi's stuck halfway up a communications tower."
"Better than being dead at the bottom of it. She survived. She's safe for now. That's all that matters."
"You think?"
"What do you mean?"
Callie tried to look back over her shoulder, but the bulk of the suit stopped her.
"She's lost her husband, her friends. She's watched all this happen, and now she's surrounded by these things waiting on us. I know I wouldn't be in great shape."
"So let's not make her wait long. Pick up the pace a bit."
Their lumber turned into more of a lope. They passed a three-way fork in the avenue, continued straight along the top walk, and then veered right at a two-way fork. She could see the running lights on Anubis straight ahead. Another 2 minutes of walking brought them to the docking end of the avenue, where a flexible polymer sleeve
extended out on articulated arms and rollers to seal against the side of a buggy. Every base on the moon had two or three. Luna City had six. Callie half-remembered a whole class on the technology during orientation. Drones could guide it into place no matter where the buggy parked, and a dozen fail-safes made it impossible for any sort of accident to disengage the seal. Of course, this hadn't been an accident. Even to her barely trained eye, the struts sat crooked, and at least two of the articulated arms bent the wrong way. The whole sleeve sagged across the top, as if the supports beneath it had been broken or pulled out. The undead flowed into the space between the hallway and the buggy. Callie guessed the wreckage of the sleeve hid even more of them. She stood on the edge of the Lunacrete hallway and looked across the wrecked docking sleeve to Anubis. The buggy looked fine. Its side hatch seemed to be sealed shut.
"I'd call it 5 meters,
said Jake. 5 and a half, tops.
Closer to 6, I think, she said.
Yeah? She nodded inside her helmet and raised her arms in front of her.
The gravedigger makes holes that are, what, 2.5 meters? Two of those end-to-end stretched out in front of us?
Jake sighed.
Yeah, you're right.
Still think you can jump it?
His shoulders rocked side to side.
Probably.
Want me to go first?
He turned to stare at her. You sure you can make it?
Jumping's one of the only things I was good at back on Earth.
Track and field? Callie shook her head.
You know, he said, strikes me that you never talk about why you're up here.
No, I don't.
He met her gaze, waited, and then nodded.
Fair enough. What do you think? You go first, and then you can save my sorry ass when I miss the roof by 0.5 meter?
She looked over at Anubis.
Are you sure about this?
Yeah, I'm just trying to deflect with comedy.
He tapped the controls on his sleeve, and she heard the background echo of their comm channel opening back up.
Those who care, he announced, we're about to jump.
We're good here, said Tessa's voice.
I've got some people standing by at Gagarin with baseball bats, Gordon's voice added. We'll have a path ready for you.
Callie furrowed her brow.
Where the hell did you get baseball bats?
Gift shop, Gordon said. She looked at Jake. Luna City Grays, he said over their private channel. Marketing gimmick some people thought up 2 or 3 years ago. Caps, shirts, bats, all sorts of stuff.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Is that where you got your cap?
Fuck no, that's a Cleveland Spiders cap I got from my dad.
Callie tapped a control on her sleeve.
Izmi, you still okay over there? I think so,
she replied.
Most of them followed you, but I still have about 2 dozen clustered around the base of the tower. They close to you? No. Even when they reach up, they're still almost 1 meter below me. Okay. Callie said. In about 5 minutes, we're going to be in Anubis and coming to get you. I'll be waiting.
Jake crouched down and swept some dust from the top walk with his fingers. A band of steel appeared at the end, right where the sleeve began.
Here's your launch point, he said. Last solid step.
Okay.
Callie took a few steps back.
Then a few more.
The spacesuit suddenly felt very clumsy and awkward. She took 3 deep breaths, forcing herself to let them out slow.
Don't go nuts, he told her. Push too hard, you go right past Anubis and land out on the plain somewhere. Just think of the times you'd jump up on one of the buggy's porches. It's just screwing around.
The screw-off Olympics, she said.
Exactly, just having fun. No pressure. Don't think about it.
You've got a lot of coaching tips for the guy who's supposed to be the worst jumper on the moon.
Well, what do they say, those who can't?
Callie started running before her nerve could break. 3 bounding steps carried her back to him. Her foot hit the steel band. Her legs tightened, flexed, kicked up and out in a beautiful grand jeté, and she sailed into the air.